Welcome to Reading the Grid with Aaron and Ina. Each week, we explore the stories behind books, movies, and shows that highlight the history of this dynamic sport. Buckle up for a fast-paced journey through Formula One. Now, let's jump into it. Oscar Piastri took his third win of the season and became the first Aussie to lead the Drivers' Championship since Mark Webber in 2010. Max Verstappen's early penalty cost him the race lead, while Charles Leclerc secured Ferrari's first podium of the year. In this episode, we're breaking down the early safety car, Verstappen's track limits drama, and how Piastri dominated F1's fastest street circuit. Let's dive into everything that actually went down under the Jeddah lights and how it stacked up against our predictions. Ina, who won your heart in Jeddah?
Always try to go outside the top three for the winner of my heart after the race, and Isaac Hadjar was very close as his relative struggles in qualifying, which saw him get into the points after being out in Q2 and qualify behind his teammate, who, need I remind you, is Liam Lawson. So that would be embarrassing any day. However, there was one driver that could not be denied. Although he has had my heart, Charles Leclerc won it all over again. I have never seen him be as satisfied with third place as he was after this race. And that was great to see. After last year's Abu Dhabi Grand Prix, when he managed to drive from P19 to P3, he looked very dejected and unable to relish in his accomplishment. Understandably, that was the race that would have won Ferrari the Constructors' Championship if he and Carlos Sainz, who was in P2, were able to move up. But I felt sad for him that he could not celebrate his monumental drive. This time, he realized that he has done his best and let himself enjoy it. It was thrilling seeing him go 29 laps on medium tires. Granted, some of these were in clean air when he was leading the race, and then come through the field on new hard, passing Russell and being able to hold off resurgent Lando Norris on mediums to stay in podium position. I was happy for him and consider him to be the true driver of the day. Aaron, who won your heart?
Well, you gave an excellent description of Isaac Hadjar for me already because that's who won my heart in Jeddah. He's my favorite rookie this year. I've been rooting for him from the start in Australia, and I thought he had a tremendous race and was really excited for him. I was expecting you to go with Charles for
Why
me.
did you? Because this was my first pick from the top three.
Because it's Charles Leclerc and it's his first podium for Ferrari of the season.
I also think he did a phenomenal job because that Ferrari did not belong in top three. I honestly don't know what happened to Mercedes. Like Russell's tires completely disintegrated, but I will never not celebrate Charles' amazing performances. As I said, it was the first time I've ever seen him be happy in third place.
I think that goes to show how tough the season has been for the team, and for them to have their first podium was pretty impressive. So, since Charles and Isaac won our hearts, who broke your heart?
The person who broke my heart may be not the one you would think, because he's not one of the drivers I root for. However, I have to say I was very disappointed for Pierre Gasly. He had a great qualifying, he made it to Q3. In the pre-race Sky interview, he mentioned that his fight was with Sainz, and I could not wait for this battle. Everything was undone in lap one, where he and Yuki Tsunoda collided. I think he was very diplomatic not to blame it on Yuki. They're obviously good friends still and former teammates, so the bromance still goes strong. But it seems to me that Yuki just did not see him and the collision occurred. You can also say that Gasly was ambitious and underestimated the gap, but nevertheless, he paid a very heavy price for it. And I'm sorry for what could have been. As we saw, your boy Hadjar kept trying to pass Albon and maybe Sainz to claim best of the rest crown, but Williams's ability to create DRS for Albon to keep Hadjar at bay kept Hadjar at P10. If Gasly was in his place, could he have persevered? With his experience, I think anything was possible.
I felt really bad for Pierre and Yuki. For me, who broke my heart was actually my driver, Lewis Hamilton, and we'll talk about that later, so I won't harp on that too much because there's more to come. Our predictions were closer in Jeddah than Bahrain. I was pretty excited to see that each of us had two out of the three correct for the top three. And on lap 36, there was a Piastri versus Verstappen and Russell. So I once again, at some point in the race, saw my prediction come true.
That is true that we got two each, but I just want to say mine was more less likely to come true. I mean, for Max and Piastri, like these were house odds. With Leclerc on the podium, especially after qualifying, that was almost a miracle.
Oh, I don't know. I almost picked Leclerc, but I didn't because we had the first and the third together. I didn't want ours to be too similar, but he had third on the podium last year, so I wasn't shocked.
But last year, his car was second best. This time, barely fourth.
I mean, Max won last year. He was on pole. Last year's cars were last year, but I don't know. I wasn't totally shocked that Leclerc actually made it on there.
It was shocking to me. I was hoping he was not going to lose fourth because I honestly thought he was not going to pass Russell. Because in every Grand Prix so far where he and Russell had a battle, Russell managed to stay ahead. I actually thought it was possible for Norris to pass him when he was on mediums, and the gap kept closing. And as Leclerc said, he was very nervous when it got to 1.2 seconds.
Leclerc did end up overtaking Russell on lap 38. Would you consider this the best overtake of the race?
It was the most significant overtake for Leclerc's podium chances, but I do not think it was more special than his usual overtakes. I've seen people call Oscar Piastri's overtake on Hamilton the best overtake of the race. I didn't think it was that special. I mean, yes, it was maybe in the dirty part of the track that usually people don't overtake, but it didn't seem that interesting. The overtake that I enjoyed the most was Lando trying to overtake Hamilton and failing two times before finally getting it on the third. I'm not sure that this delay caused him not being able to catch Leclerc for third at the end, but it was thoroughly entertaining watching Lewis letting Lando pass just to use the DRS to overtake. I think it was the only moment of brilliance for Lewis in that race.
I disagree. I believe that Hamilton played a crucial role in securing that podium. Between laps 14 and 16, the buffer that Hamilton created was identical to the gap between Leclerc and Norris at 1.2 seconds. When you add in Ferrari's fastest pit stop of the race, to me, it was a true team effort. Yes, Leclerc delivered, but I believe Hamilton's racecraft deserves credit too.
A first corner incident between Max Verstappen and Oscar Piastri sparked controversy. Verstappen, starting from pole, ran wide at turn one to retain the lead, resulting in a 5-second penalty for gaining an advantage off track. This penalty allowed Piastri to overtake during pit stops and secure his third win of the season. This incident has fueled discussions about racing conduct and FIA penalties.
I think he should have gotten a 10-second penalty. In fact, the FIA official document stated that it would have been a 10-second penalty if not for it being a turn one incident. In this case, I do not think it mattered that it was turn one. Max didn't have a great start. Oscar reacted better, and Max decided to test the limits and intimidate Oscar into backing off. It did not work, and he should have gotten the same penalty as Liam Lawson, who keeps getting penalties, points instead of actual points. Max was very quiet in his post-race interview. So my question to you, Aaron, why? If you remember, after Qatar, when George Russell and Max Verstappen had their beef, and George said that Max is a bully and he lashes out when things don't go his way, and if Abu Dhabi 2021 happened to Max as opposed to Lewis, Max would not handle it as well as Lewis and not with the same class. So Max's petulant reaction may show that George was onto something. The fact that he was so monosyllabic and non-reactive after the race, is it because he's so passionate about winning that not winning causes him to completely melt down? Is it the conversation with Mohammed bin Sulayem, which probably resulted in him being threatened with penalties or fines if he tried to criticize the FIA for giving him the penalty? Or is it him just being a sore loser?
It's a combination of all of them. If drivers openly criticize the FIA, they are at risk of a point reduction or a race ban. I do not necessarily think those are the appropriate punishments for disagreeing with the FIA. I think Max is entitled to disagree. I think Max is wrong, but I don't think the driver should have to worry about losing points or missing a race because they do not agree with the FIA. I completely agree with you that if it was the reverse in 21, he would not handle it the way Lewis did. I mean, Lewis congratulated him, shook his hand. I can only imagine the tantrum that Max would have thrown after that if the call went the opposite way, which it should have. George is correct. Max is a bully, and plenty of people have come out saying if people treated Max the way Max treats others, he would not handle it. I think he can dish it. I don't think he can take it. I did see that Horner had photos printed and trying to argue that he was correct. And I think that's just Christian doing his job of trying to defend his driver. Instead, he should have just admitted the wrong.
Well, that's the thing about Red Bull. They made a mistake. And I think the mistake they made is not to tell Max to swap the position. Because I don't know if you noticed, but Antonelli did the exact same thing to Leclerc and he gave the position right back. Now, I get it that they may not have thought that Max would give the position back. But my point is, they cannot be held hostage by a driver. Like, they still have to show some kind of strategy. And I think that was the thing that magnified this issue where they knew he was wrong. They did not want to admit it, even to him, that they thought he was wrong. And then after the race, they had to stand by and continue the narrative. I just want to add the funniest thing about all of this, none of this was funny, actually. Max didn't even spray champagne on the podium. He did not participate in the cool down room. And that's one highlight of Max being on the podium, is that he always is chatty, involves the other drivers. Obviously, when he wins, he's a lot chattier. But my point is, he was with his favorite boy, Charles Leclerc. Like, come on, where's my cutie patootie moment? Afterwards, when Albon was giving his interview, he revealed that he's actually flying on Max's private jet. FYI, Lando is not. He was very excited that he's finally graduated to private jet. And then the interviewer told him, hey, by the way, Max is not in a good mood because of the penalty. Albon seemed completely bewildered that Max got a penalty. And when told that this is the penalty from turn one incident that he's still upset about and he thinks cost him the race, Albon immediately said, well, then I'm going to go to bed as soon as I get on the private jet, which I thought was very funny and endearing. But it actually shows very interesting because Max is always aware of what's going on with other drivers during his race. And it's obvious that either Albon didn't want to admit it or he was so focused on his race that he really didn't pay attention to what was going on in front of him.
My guess that Albon was so focused on his race because Williams finishing eighth and ninth, and there was the whole thing towards the end with Carlos letting him by and DRS. I would say he was probably way too focused on his race. Someone who did not have a great race was Lewis Hamilton. He called his Saudi Arabian Grand Prix horrible as he struggled to P7 in Jeddah, continuing a rocky start to life at Ferrari. Despite a sprint win in China, Hamilton says he hasn't felt comfortable for 1 second in the car, signaling deeper issues with performance and setup.
Just to put everything in perspective, Ollie Bearman substituted for Sainz at last year's Grand Prix due to Sainz's appendectomy. He finished P7 as well, with a gap that was just so slightly less than the gap between Lewis and Charles. And just to emphasize, this was Ollie's first race in Formula One. He missed two practices and then straight to qualifying and into the race the next day, which is very impressive. So this is very worrying. There are a number of theories with regards to what is happening with Lewis. We have to point out that Jeddah is Lewis's least favorite track. Fred Vasseur, in an interview after the race, said that he talked to him, which would explain why he missed watching Leclerc's first podium for Ferrari, which was also the first Ferrari podium in the main race, but did not disclose how they were going to solve for the issues that Lewis is experiencing. He still looked more upbeat than he was at Bahrain. But it is possible he was just putting on a brave face.
We had F1 veterans weigh in. Damon Hill noted the psychological and technical challenge of adapting to Ferrari after over a decade with Mercedes. And Martin Brundle added that somebody explained that it's harder to relearn and move teams than it is to be a rookie and just learn in the first place. For Hamilton, the adjustment period is proving more complex and more public than expected. Although I will say, I have complete faith in my driver. He will figure this out. It's difficult to see him struggle, but I know he is doing everything he can to learn and will figure this out because there's nothing that man loves more than a challenge and to prove people wrong.
Another interesting dynamic that we observed is Bortoleto versus Alonso. Fernando Alonso narrowly avoided a collision with Gabriel Bortoleto, a rookie driver managed by Alonso's own A14 management company. The incident occurred when Bortoleto moved under braking, nearly sandwiching Alonso between his Sauber and the wall at turn one. Oscar Piastri had a great reaction in the cool down room. The only time in the cool down room, Max reacted with a laugh. When they showed their Alonso and Bartoletto contact, he said, "He may not have a flight home anymore." And just the deadpan way Oscar said it was very funny. Alonso reacted swiftly to avoid a crash, later joking, maybe no dinner for him, referencing their shared flight home. Bartoletto explained he didn't see Alonso and was surprised by the contact, while Alonso emphasized the importance of avoiding penalties and noted that both drivers were struggling during the race. Not to be outdone is, of course, Flavio Briatore, who manages Jack Doohan and cannot wait to chug him out of Alpine. The news has come that apparently Jack has until summer break to prove that he deserves the seat, and this is again against Flavio Briatore's wishes, again, his manager. After Leclerc's overtake on Russell, Leclerc's race engineer complimented him on a great move, and Leclerc's response, "Thank you, Brian," was their tone. I'm not sure, but a lot of people think there was a lot of subtext to that thank you.
There definitely seemed to be a little sass in that exchange between Leclerc and his engineer on the radio.
If you remember from last year in Miami, Lando had a little scuffle because he went to King's Day celebration in Amsterdam and he received a bruise on his nose, which was very visible during the race, and that actually won him the race. In his post-race interview, he admitted that he will skip this year's King's Day celebrations to focus on the next race. And also, and I think this is key, he has not had a drink since the beginning of the year.
I'd say that's maturity on Lando's part because he has a party boy reputation, and you can't really do that if you are trying to secure a World Drivers' Championship.
I also think it's very good that he wasn't on Max's plane because I'm sure there were a lot of gin and tonics. Also interesting during the race, there was a swapping of position in Haas between Bearman and Ocon, and notice Ocon did not put up a fight. I'm just not sure why it happened as they stayed in the same places after the swap. And of course, Carlos Sainz did not sound super happy when told that he had to help Albon by staying within a second of him to create DRS to keep Hadjar at bay. I mean, they do have a good relationship, but as I always say, Sainz has this selfish side that takes over during the race, and being a helpful teammate always comes second. Karma may have bit him because at the end of the race, he could not get out of his car. I don't know if he was stuck on something because otherwise it would be very dangerous since if there was an incident, he had to be able to get out of his car. But what's interesting that a Sauber mechanic helped him out, which I thought was a very good evidence of cross-team cooperation.
With Jeddah behind us, let's build the grid, our gossip with a racing twist. There's a new development in the case involving Red Bull boss Christian Horner and his former assistant. She remains on paid leave and now questions the independence of a Red Bull-funded lawyer involved in the 2024 internal investigation that cleared Horner. According to the Daily Mail, Red Bull and Horner are seeking to avoid trial with confidential settlement talks reportedly in the millions of pounds. While we are sticking with Red Bull, Helmut Marko has named Sebastian Vettel as his quote unquote ideal successor when he retires.
Well, Sebastian would be much kinder. What's interesting also about Vettel is that Lando said that Sebastian extended his support to him personally, which is a very interesting juxtaposition since Vettel and Mark Webber, who is Oscar's manager, used to be teammates, and Mark Webber got the driver number two treatment that we've all heard about and actually heard Lando and Oscar joking in Japan in the cool down room, referencing Multi 21.
That's pretty interesting with Vettel advising Lando and Mark advising Oscar and how they essentially split the McLaren garage.
Lance Stroll becomes the driver with the most Q1 exits in F1 history, dethroning Kevin Magnussen. There has only been one driver that has qualified in the top four in every Saudi Arabian Grand Prix since its F1 debut. Ina, can you take a guess as to who this driver might be?
I don't need a guess. I know. It's Charles Leclerc.
DHL Motorsports. They are the sponsor of the logistics and getting the grid and the paddock around, have awarded Ferrari the fastest pit stop for Leclerc at 2 seconds flat. And Ferrari's pit stop for Hamilton was at 2.07 seconds.
And I think that's great, because one thing that I always admired about Red Bull is that when they were definitely not the best car, they really focused on their operations and logistics and making sure those were top notch. And one of the things that they were the first on the grid to do is get their pit stops to the minimum time possible. I mean, they broke 2 seconds record consistently in 2024. I don't know what's happening this year, but I'm glad that Ferrari is showing something good in an area. We'll take that and we'll build on it.
I agree. And last thing, if you are out, be sure to grab a copy of the latest Vogue with Lewis Hamilton on the cover. It talks about how he's hosting the Met Gala, which is coming up on the first Monday of May.
After an action-packed triple header, the grid takes a well-earned pause before the paddock heads to Miami. Sunshine, palm trees, and maybe a surprise or two as the championship fight heats up in the 305.
Okay, Ina, even though we have a bit of a break and a reset and rest before we head to the 305, who do you think is going to be on the podium and what will Ferrari do?
This time, I'm not trying to be accurate. I'm trying to manifest. Unfortunately, I don't think many new faces will make it on the podium, so I can't be completely delusional. But you know what? Let's be in Delulu land. Now, P1, Charles Leclerc. Don't know why. It's not his favorite track. Just going with it. He was three here and nobody expected it. I manifested it. Manifesting P1. P2, I love a redemption arc, and he will have a redemption. Lando Norris. I'll put Oscar Piastri in P3. It's the same three as last time, but I think the order is interesting. In terms of Lewis, I would have put him higher, but this performance does not fill me with a lot of hope. However, I think he can do a respectable P5. Over to you.
Bold prediction. I hope it happens for you. Last year, Lando won his first Grand Prix win in Miami. So Lando is going to have to be on the podium somewhere, because everyone thought he'd have a redemption run this go round. No one expected him to crash in Q3. I'm going to keep Oscar in P1. I'll put Charles at P2 and Lando P3. Really don't want to keep putting Oscar in P1, but I don't know how not to do that, because I feel like it'll be Oscar or Max.
You better not manifest another P2 for Max. That's all I'm saying.
I'm going to keep Oscar in P1. Lewis will make it through Q3. He will be in the top 10. He will be in points. You're a little more optimistic at 5 than I am, because I was going to put him at 6.
That's fine. It's still progress, right?
Yes.
I just want to say my usual caveats apply. No disqualification. No losing positions. Let's just try this.
Okay, well, so that was for the main race. We need to do predictions for the sprint. Who's going to take sprint pole in Miami?
I'm going to give it to him just to get him out of the way, Max.
Is he going to convert that to a sprint?
Yes.
Win?
Let him take the sprint. At least it'll be like less pressure during the race.
Okay. I will give Charles Leclerc sprint pole, sprint win, Miami.
Listen, between your predictions and my hopium, I hope, like, we're manifesting a lot. That would be amazing. Does he even have a sprint win? I don't think so.
I don't think so. Well, Lewis didn't have.
I know.
So and he did in China. So, I mean, maybe Lewis is just the winner of all the sprints this year. And I would be happy with that, too.
I will take it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I will take it. It's hilarious. Between your prediction and my prediction for sprint, I think one of them will come true. I just really hope it's yours.
Me too. Ferrari, sprint win, sprint pole, sprint win. We'll see who it is. You're going with Max. would happen.
I just know I have to give him something because, you know, he's going to be on his vengeance tour. And unlike Lando's redemption arc, I believe more in that vengeance. Because remember what happened at Qatar?
Oh, yeah. Well,
he had that beef with George. He lost the grid position and then he went on a tear. So we're going to go on a tear. So I'd rather he gets it out of his system during the sprint so we can have the race we want.
I'm good with that, although I'd much prefer it be Ferrari on sprint pole and sprint win. But we'll see what happens. But those are our predictions locked in for the Miami Grand Prix. And Ferrari will have a special team kit for Miami.
I remember last time, that atrocious blue team
Dynaco
kit.
Dynaco blue.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
So that did not work out great. Yep. Although I believe Charles still ended up P3. But that was a better car.
He was P3 last year.
Yeah.
Ferrari last year had 3 and 5. You're predicting 1 and 5. I will take that, even though I'm going with 2 and 6.
Yeah, listen, I'll take that too.
Thanks so much for hanging out with us. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to hit that subscribe button so you never miss an update.
Would also love to hear from you, whether it's your thoughts on today's episode, your suggestions for F1 books, shows, or movies to explore, or a shout out to your favorite Best of the Rest candidate. Connect with us on Instagram, YouTube, or X, or drop us an email at readingthegrid@gmail.com. We want your ideas to fuel this podcast, so don't be shy.
Thanks for joining us on Reading the Grid. Keep your engines running and your pages turning. Until next time.